So I watched this video from this this YouTuber that I've followed for a number of years now. His name is Stevie T. I think it's Stephen Terry Berry, something like that. Stevie T is just the only way I know him, I guess. It talked about some things that I've kind of thought about to myself for a while, and I'm actually trying to figure out whether I feel like the things he had to say in this video make me feel old and grumpy, or less old and grumpy, or what? Like, I'm trying to figure this out. I'll link to the video. It has to do with music, and specifically it has to do with connection to music, or at least that was kind of my interpretation of it, and how the connection to music has changed over time, but how that specifically connects to the way music is delivered. So that's all really abstract, but the general idea goes like this. So I grew up, born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s predominantly. And for me, like I really listened to a lot of music during those years. And I loved buying albums at a record store, or as, you know, stores got bigger, like say a Best Buy or something, whatever. For me, that was mostly in the form of, there was many years of CDs, many years of tapes before that. So tapes and CDs, you know, cassettes and CDs. And there was a whole number of things that went along with that. Let's say that you knew that there was a band that put out like a single or something that you had heard that you really liked. Well, you would go and you'd buy the album. And that right there, just in and of itself, because an album might be, you know, $12 or $15 or, you know, as time went on, towards 20. So you had to spend money on this thing. And as a kid or a teenager, you know, those years, it's not like I had a ton of money floating around to go do this with, right? Like I don't even know where I got money from, like, you know, at that time of my life, you know, what, little part-time jobs and doing chores or whatever. Like I don't even, so to spend $12, $15 on a CD was not insignificant. So you would go and you buy the thing, and then you would bring it home and you'd realize that like a lot of the songs on the album were not really anything like the single that put out in many cases. I mean, sometimes they were, but sometimes they weren't. And what would happen is that over the course of time, like you were familiar with the single, right? So you already liked that track, which means that everything else on that album in comparison was going to be different and unfamiliar, which would mean that at the outset, you were less likely to, you know, love all the rest of the songs as much as you love that single. But then a funny thing would happen, at least to me, is that over time, that album would grow on you, right? Or on me, at least, right? Because it's not like I would just stop listening to the album. When I bought a new album, that would be the only thing in my CD player for weeks, if not months, right? Because it's the new album I bought. I'm not probably going to buy another album for a while. So you would listen to it and you would kind of get invested in what was on there. And over time, these other songs would grow on you. And you would kind of form this connection, not just with the single that was originally exposed you to this group, but the rest of their music too. And then for groups that had multiple singles on an album, who had increasing popularity or whatever, you would almost try to guess or be hopeful of what the next single was, because you'd have like your own favorites and sort of your B-side favorites and all that kind of stuff. But the experience of an album of, you know, 9, 10, 12, 15 tracks that you then learn to love over time, that you experience over the course of time, that grow on you, that's very different than what we get now, where generally speaking, it's just a string of singles. You hear maybe a band or a group, or more likely just a single artist featuring 9 other artists on some kind of streaming service like Apple Music or Spotify or, you know, whatever. And you may or may not know that that's, may or may not ever even hear the rest of that album. you might never dig into it. You might just listen to it in a string of other singles. And I don't think that's all that dissimilar from what radio always did, right? Which was just play singles from popular artists. But I think the difference is, and what this video kind of goes into, is that there's no, that experience of going out to buy the rest of that creator's work is no longer a thing. Even though it would be even easier today to get to that, right? Where in theory, you can assuming that whatever you're listening to has a full album that's connected to, it's easier than ever to pull up the rest of the entries on that album and listen through it. But I think because of the sheer quantity of music that's at our fingertips, A, we probably don't do that at all, pull up an album. But B, even if you do pull up the album, it's very unlikely that you're going to invest the kind of time and dedication that you might have in a case where you had gone to the store to buy that album on limited resources, and maybe it's the only album you're going to buy for the next 4-8 weeks, you know, or whatever. There's an irony, right? There's an irony to having all this music at your fingertips and not exploring music as deeply or as pervasively as we once did, because it's so much easier just to flip on some kind of pre-made playlist or whatever, and it'll just cycle you through hundreds, thousands of songs. And you may never, and so it all becomes a little bit of just a continued experience. Like, and I know I'm guilty of this, right? I use Apple Music. So I'll go to Apple Music. I'll turn on like whatever I have a station on there. That's like a station that's supposed to be quote unquote customized for me, or a new music station or whatever. And I'll flip it on and then pay attention to almost none of it. You know, it's just background. I'm not invested in any of it in particular. And occasionally there'll be a song that I'll hear a few times. It'll kind of call out to me and maybe I'll look a little bit into that. But it's not, I don't think I've found a band that I've gone deep in on in years in the way that I used to regularly. And there's a whole conversation here as well around artists and record labels really pushing forward the concept of a single much more than they used to, where it used to be more about the album. And of course, there were always singles on the radio, but the album was still a worthwhile thing to promote and whatnot, and just sort of the overall efficiency of getting music into some kind of popular venue. Like, there's a whole sub conversation here around that stuff. But I think at the end of the day, it's like anything else. If all of the money and fame and popularity is going to come from a string of singles, because all people listen to is a string of singles, then all the rest of those songs that might be on an album somewhere are going to receive less effort, most likely, just naturally. And I'm sure that if you talk to a musician who still put out albums and whatnot, they would say, no, that's not how this works. But I think at some level, it almost certainly does. It's like trying to disprove a negative, right? Like, you can't know for sure. For those of you who listened to music in this other form, in this, you know, through the years, where you would buy the albums and listen through them, whether it was on records or tapes or CDs or whatever. How many great B-side tracks do you remember from those kind of things? And compare that now. Can you even list what a B-side track is? In most cases, I can't, even for the few bands that I have kind of kept up with over the years. Anyway, the reason that this video kind of like, I'm still trying to figure it out, is because this person, I believe, is younger than me. Like, he looks much younger than me, but the experience that he outlines is exactly how I have felt about music through the years. And I remember coming up, and when a certain amount of like Napster pirating started, and we started getting these bigger MP3 players and all that kind of stuff. Once we were no longer required to burn CDs, like mix CDs or record mixtapes, right? Once we got to a point where the technology had expanded beyond that, I remember being very excited about that. I was like, oh, it's more music. It's going to be so great. I don't have to limit my CD, my burned CD to 14 tracks or whatever. Like they held like what, 70 minutes or 80 minutes on most of them. That limit is gone. I listen to so much more music. And what I found is that might be true. There's a possibility that I do listen to more music than I used to. But I think it's also safe to say that the experience of listening to music has become more disposable to me. Listening to any given track, song, album, artist is not as careful or important or I'm missing the word, but it is not as much of a formative experience at any given time that it used to be. And so there's an irony to that. With limitless music at your fingertips, music, listening to it is less, you feel less connected than you used to. There's an irony there. If any of this sounds familiar, I would go check out his video. It really did go through. So it's entertaining. He's an entertaining guy. But I did go through some interesting stuff and some things that I would not have expected to hear someone. I don't know exactly how old he is, but again, he seems a bit younger than me. So I didn't assume I would hear things about cassette tapes and CDs when he was talking, but it very much mirrored some of the thoughts that I've had on this over the years. And I just remember, you know, some of the things he calls out, for instance, he talks about going to a record store and buying a CD based on the cover art. And I'll just end with this. That is an experience that I deeply miss. Going to a record store, we had a book and record store not far from, you know, where I grew up. And so we would go in there, my friends and I, and we would poke around through the CD racks and just find covers that looked cool or funny. And I'll tell you, I found some really interesting stuff that way. That's actually how I found Les Claypool and Primus. That's also how I found Oingo Boingo. So some popular bands that I just, you know, through my experience at that time in my life, I hadn't heard of before. But I found them because they had cool covers on CDs. And I'm picking them up and being like, oh, this is really neat. And then getting into a whole catalog. So there's whole groups that are in the popular zeitgeist that I might never have really been exposed to had it not been for that experience. So anyway, check out the video if any of this sounds interesting to you. I thought it was pretty well done and definitely mirrored, you know, a lot of the stuff that I think and feel about music these days. And so it was just kind of, I don't know if it made me feel like younger, older, validated, invalidated. Like, I don't really know, but it definitely just was a thing that over the years I have noticed as well.